How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the Pope is acknowledging for the first time the persistent problem of nuns being sexually assaulted by priests. Why it took the Catholic Church so long to recognize this group of victims. It's Thursday, February 7th.
Assalamu alaikum.
So earlier this week, Pope Francis spent 3 days in the United Arab Emirates.
Ringrazio di cuore Sua Altezza Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan.
A historic trip for a pope, first time a pope had ever been in the Arabian Peninsula.
Lori Goodstein has covered the Catholic Church for decades.
He celebrated Mass for more than 100,000 Catholics in that country, most of whom are migrant workers from other Catholic countries. It was a very emotional event for them to see the Pope.
Per voi non è certo facile vivere lontani da casa.
The Pope also signed a landmark document on relations between Catholics and Muslims. And all in all, it was a successful and historic trip.
Buon pomeriggio a tutti voi.
So on the plane back to Rome, it's traditional for the Pope to take questions from the press corps traveling with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of open mic. It's whatever the reporters want to ask. And this Pope is very game. He will talk at length with reporters if he is feeling peppy enough. And this time, he got a question that had nothing to do with the trip he had just made. It was from a reporter for the Associated Press, their Vatican correspondent, Nicole Winfield. She asked him about reports that had been made last week in a Vatican magazine that nuns were being abused by priests and even by bishops. He said, it's true. In the church, there have been some clerics, and in some cultures, a little more strongly than others. It's not that everyone does this, he said.
Ci sono stati sacerdoti.
But there have been priests and bishops who have done this.
Che hanno fatto quello.
So here is the Pope saying, on the record, that members of the clergy are sexually abusing nuns.
That's right.
And what did you think, as someone who has covered the Catholic Church for more than a quarter of a century, when you heard that?
Well, I was stunned at how open he was responding to this question.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of nuns being abused, being sexually abused by priests and bishops, is something that has percolated at a very low boil for a very long time.
How long?
I first came across this problem reading a report in the National Catholic Reporter in 2001. They had gotten hold of documents that had been prepared by church officials talking about the problem of sexual abuse of nuns by priests. And it got my attention because it was focused on Africa, and in particular the problem of priests who raped nuns during the AIDS epidemic there, the outbreak of the AIDS epidemic. In fact, there's a report from 1994 by a nun who investigated 23 countries, and she says, for example, a superior of a community of sisters in one country was approached by priests requesting that sisters would be made available to them for sexual favors. When the superior refused, the priests explained that they would otherwise be obliged to go to the village to find women and might thus get AIDS. And so what this nun concluded was that sometimes nuns are identified as, quote, safe, unquote, targets for sexual activity.
Who would not be carrying the virus?
That's right. Safe in quotes, because this was not safe for these women who were raped. And they said at the time that it was not just something that went on in Africa, sexual abuse of nuns by priests, but they highlighted the problem on that continent. There were no numbers. There was not an overview of the extent of the problem, but it was the first time I had ever encountered that issue.
And you said it percolated along for a while. So when was the next time that you heard about it?
Probably the next time was just last year. There was a report out of India of a nun who accused a bishop of raping her over several years. And she actually went to the police and made a report. And that's very unusual. The event ended up splitting her religious order. There were women, other nuns in the religious order who sided with the bishop. Then there were some nuns who came to her support and signed a letter in her support. And finally, the bishop was arrested. But that was only after a lot of pressure. And he's now facing trial.
Lori, why do you think that this has remained under the radar for so long?
For so many years, we were consumed with covering another abuse scandal in the church, and that's the abuse of children by priests. It was so extensive and so shocking and went on for so long. The first case emerged in 1985 in Louisiana. Then you had the Boston scandal in 2001 that then spread all across the United States. And cases are still coming out of the woodwork. Mm-hmm. People are still coming forward for the first time being willing to talk about what happened to them so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
For a Catholic churchgoer who was abused by a priest, it's very, very hard to come forward. It can take a person well into their 50s, 60s before they're willing to talk about it. And so if it's hard for a lay person, imagine what it would be like for a nun.
Hmm. What do you mean?
For Catholics, the nun is often the public giving face of the church. They know nuns as teachers, maybe as healthcare workers, as social workers, sometimes professors. But often the nuns are the Catholic workers who take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
But within the church, many nuns tell me they feel like second-class citizens. The priests who are ordained are on top. And while the nuns run around and do a lot of the work, and again, are the face of the church to the people, nuns say they often feel subservient to the priests. And in some places, they actually literally are. The Vatican's women's magazine, there's a supplement with the Vatican newspaper for women every month.
Mm-hmm.
Last year came out with a special edition on work and had an article focused on nuns' work and revealed that nuns are doing menial work for bishops and priests. They are doing their laundry. They are cooking their food and often unpaid and certainly unsung. This is not everywhere, but this is common enough across the church. So while nuns are often highly educated and don't see themselves as subservient, that's often how they are seen by their superiors in the church and by priests.
So might that explain why it's taken so long for us to understand what's been happening to these nuns? Because they're essentially subservient.
That's a part of it. There are factors that face nuns that don't face lay people who are not, you know, living and working in the church.
Mm-hmm.
For a nun, there's also a fear of retaliation. If a nun goes and tells her mother superior that she's been abused by the priest, perhaps that's the priest who comes and celebrates mass at their convent every day. The mother superior might tell the nun, oh, you should just stay quiet. We can't risk going public with this. We can't risk a confrontation with this priest or this bishop. So just let it go. The other thing that happens in the case of nuns is that in some cultures, they are accused of luring the priest into sex. There's an assumption that, you know, it's the woman who's guilty. It's the woman who caused this. So that's also a huge reason why nuns might not come forward and might just sit with this secret for the rest of their lives. But sometimes even when they don't stay quiet, they might report this to their mother superior or a colleague, another nun, who might tell them, you can't go public about this abuse by a priest or by a bishop because they hold the purse strings for our religious order. They could cut us off or they could kick us out of our convent. There are some arrangements in some cultures where the women's religious order does not have control of their own finances.
They're at the mercy of these priests and these bishops that we now know, in some cases, were sexually assaulting these nuns.
Sometimes they are. So there's a fear of retaliation, either personally, that that nun could be thrown out of her religious order and the life she's always known, or even fear of retaliation against the entire women's religious community, that she could be putting her own sisters in jeopardy.
Do you know cases where nuns try to come forward with accusations and were retaliated against?
Only recently, last year in Chile, there was an order of nuns where something like half a dozen of the women reported abuse. And when they tried to report, they were thrown out of the order.
Wow.
The Vatican is looking into that case, but the message to those women initially was, we're going to retaliate against you because you spoke out.
So from everything you're describing, nuns are subservient in the clergy system. They fear retaliation, and they don't have a lot of outlets to go around the people who are in power. So that suggests it would be a Herculean task for them to report sexual abuse.
That's right. And nuns are also vulnerable. A lot of them, in a lot of cultures other than the United States, are very young. And the same as with lay people, they see the priest as an embodiment of Jesus. They might see the priest as a father figure. They might also see the priest as their confessor. He might be their confessor.
The person to whom they go into a confession booth and describe what their sins are.
That's right. He may also be their spiritual mentor. And so there is a trust and a vulnerability that nuns have as well as these children who are abused by priests.
It's kind of painful to think that for the past 2 decades, maybe even 3 decades, while the entire world was discovering the abuse of children inside the church and investigating it and bringing charges against the priest, that this entire other sex abuse scandal of nuns went largely unnoticed and kind of undisrupted and unaccounted for at the same time.
It is very disturbing, especially since it's women who were so much a part of church life, but who were being overlooked and whose own pain was being overlooked.
Lori, it's kind of hard not to see all of this, the child sex abuse scandal and the now emerging sexual assault of nuns, as deeply connected and very revealing about a larger set of problems inside the Catholic Church. And I wonder what you think those are.
The Pope talks a lot about that the problem is clericalism. The problem is putting the priest on a pedestal and not treating the priest as a human being, seeing him as some, you know, superhuman figure who can do no wrong. I think the bigger picture is the sexual secrets in the church. This is a church in which the clergy are supposed to be chaste and celibate. They are in some ways set apart from the rest of human beings. This is a vow they take. But as many priests will admit, this is a very hard life to live. Some do live it, but many do not. I have written about priests who had illicit sexual relationships with lay women. This was not abuse, but priests who had relationships with lay women. And those kind of violations become secrets. Mm-hmm. It is not something that's supposed to be discussed. Abuse of children, abuse of women, sexual abuse is different than a sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And yet all these things go on in the church among the clergy, and they're all connected. Because if a bishop is living a secret life, maybe one of his priests knows about that. But the priest won't speak about the bishop because maybe the priest is living some kind of a secret life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are layers upon layers of secrets.
And one may be far worse than the other, but everyone is bound by the vow of celibacy and doesn't want to be outed as having violated it. So they're all keeping each other's secrets? Is that the idea?
That's what's been portrayed by people who study sexuality in the clergy. When you have an ideal that many of these priests believe in and want to live by, but many of them can't, and you have people living double lives, that contributes to a kind of sexual secrets and hypocrisy that is quite widespread, from what I am told.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a scenario I have heard about often enough. The bishop has a very close friend who is more than a close friend. And it could be a priest. It could be a layman. It could be a woman. And one of his priests is accused of child sexual abuse. Well, those two have secrets on one another.
Right.
And so they protect one another. That's a scenario I have heard about over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And if you are a nun and you've been sexually abused by a priest, you would fit, unfortunately, into this system of secrets and kind of blackmail and hypocrisy.
A priest might not tell on another priest whom they know is having sex with nuns or who is even sexually abusing nuns.
And given that no one is motivated to come forward, the priests who have their own secrets, keeping other priests' secrets, nuns who have many obstacles to go public, it's hard to see how any of this would change.
That's why in some ways the Pope's acknowledgement is so extraordinary. Because he not only admitted that it's a problem, but he said it's an ongoing problem. And he said it's something that the church is paying attention to.
So what do you think that the Pope's goal was in acknowledging this history, if there's no real plan to change this issue that's at the center of all this and the dilemma of how to solve it, which it feels like is celibacy?
What I think is that it's an issue he can no longer ignore. It's out in the open. Only recently, a top official at the Vatican was forced to resign because a former nun came forward and said he had sexually abused her.
Hmm.
Now, he says it's not true and he's going to fight the case, but he was forced to resign, and this was public in Rome. The Vatican's own magazine just wrote an article about this problem. It's not something he can honestly claim isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And answering the question on the plane, he said, not only have they been working on it for some time, but he said, we have suspended a few clerics and sent some away over this, over abuse of nuns.
So the church has very quietly gotten rid of priests who have had sexual relationships with nuns.
The Pope is acknowledging that for the first time in this answer on the plane. He said, I think that the problem is continuing because it's not like once you realize it, it stops. It continues. And he says, should something more be done? Yes. Do we have the will? Yes. But it's a path that we've been on for some time.
Hmm. So now that he has acknowledged this and said that the church has very quietly gotten rid of some priests who may have been involved in this, what do you think the church will do more broadly to acknowledge this and to address it?
In a few weeks, the Vatican is having a meeting on sexual abuse of children and minors primarily. But they also do talk about abuse of vulnerable adults. And that came up last year when an American cardinal was accused of abusing seminary students and young priests. Mm-hmm. There have also been cases where priests abuse disabled adults, and that's why they use that term, vulnerable adults. We'll see whether nuns fit under that rubric as vulnerable adults, or to what extent the topic of abuse of nuns comes up in this meeting in a couple weeks.
And if this meeting that's happening in Rome is taking place 2 decades after the childhood sex abuse scandals first came to light, what does that say, do you think, about how long the church will be dealing with the abuse of nuns, which the Pope just acknowledged for the first time this week?
It could be a very long time before the church really confronts this. But it's now on the table, and it will be hard to ignore.
Lori, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for The New York Times, covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating to these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about The New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today. Virginia was in political turmoil on Wednesday as controversy engulfed the state's top 3 elected officials. First, Governor Ralph Northam acknowledged a racist photo of 2 men, one in blackface, the other in a KKK hood, on his medical school yearbook page. Then, his lieutenant governor, Justin Fairfax, was publicly accused of sexually assaulting a woman in 2004. Finally, the state's attorney general, Mark Herron, admitted that he had put on blackface as a college student. Northam has said that he is neither man in the photo. Fairfax has denied he assaulted the woman, and Herring has apologized for wearing blackface. All 3 men are facing pressure to resign, creating a potential crisis of succession. Under Virginia rules, if Northam steps down, both Fairfax and Herring are in line to succeed him. And
I can fully understand why the president has gotten used to the idea that Congress doesn't do oversight, because for the last 2 years, the Republican majority has essentially been missing in action when it comes to being a co-equal branch of government.
The House Intelligence Committee, now under control of a Democrat, Representative Adam Schiff, launched a broad new inquiry on Wednesday into the potential influence that Russia and other foreign powers may be exercising over President Trump.
But that ended with the midterms. We're going to do our jobs. The president needs to do his. And our job involves making sure that the policy of the United States is being driven by the national interest.
Schiff said that the investigation will pursue, quote, credible reports of money laundering and financial compromise involving Trump's businesses.
And on what basis would he do that? He has no basis to do that. He's just a political hack who's trying to build a name for himself, and I think that's fine because that's what they do, but there would be no reason to do that.
During a news conference at the White House, Trump dismissed the investigation as a publicity stunt.
No other politician has to go through that. It's called presidential harassment, and it's unfortunate, and it really does hurt our country.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.